261 LBC.
Christmas morning from me, Bob Holness.
And me, Douglas Cameron.
We're going to be with you for the next couple of hours with a miscellany of people and music. Good morning.
Lovely. What a marvellous start to our Christmas show. Hope everybody's opening their presents and all wide awake and bushy-tailed and all that sort of thing. Lovely introduction, that, Bob. Who is it by?
Oh, it's by an orchestra you may just have heard of, Douglas. I've mentioned him once or twice on the AM show over the years. A chap named Stan Kenton.
Stan Kenton.
Yes, sir.
Stan Kenton gets into every show that Bob Holness does on any radio station.
I've got news for you, actually, Douglas, because a little later in the programme we're going to be talking to a certain member of the staff. Well, he's not a member of the staff, he's a contributor to AM, and he, in fact, used to be a jazz musician, and he's opted for the same gentleman, but it's not quite such a modern arrangement. That's a little later on.
Well, what we're going to do today, for the next couple of hours, is to really talk to a few of the contributors to AM, the people that have made the programme the really good show it is over the last 12 months. And here's a fella that's really, well, I would have thought, made quite an impact on people around about 25 past nine some mornings.
Hello, they asked me to come here to pick my favourite song for you at Christmas instead of picking the news. I thought I'd do something right away for Dougie Cameron because he's always talking about Conway Twitty. So in this season of goodwill, why shouldn't I?
Long distance information, give me Memphis, Tennessee. Help me find a party, try to get in touch with me. I do not know her number, but I know who placed the call. My uncle took the message and he wrote it on the wall.
Because of Bob Holness, that's why. I can't play that stuff for Cameron alone. In fairness, I must come up with a Christmas song for the yesterday man himself.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely nights dreaming of a song, the melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration.
No, no, it's my Christmas song, and so it just has to be this.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working today no more.
Thank you.
got bills to pay. I'd give the shirt right off of my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. My woman done left and took all the reason I was working for. You better not try to stand in my way as I'm walking out the door. Take this job and shove it. I'm gonna blow my top, and that sucker, he's gonna pay. Lord, I can't wait to see their faces when I get the nerve to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. My woman done left, took all the reason I was working for. You better not try.
Well, that was Take This Job and Shove It by little old wine-drinking Jim Kelts.
Yes, who else? Unmistakable man, Jim. Jim Kelts, who's now a bearded man, looks a little like Ernest Hemingway used to look in his younger days. We turn now to somebody who's heard not that often on the air, actually. She's something of a backroom girl. She, in fact, used to be in the information department before she became a fully-fledged producer. Now she's part and parcel of the LBC Reports team in the afternoon. She does a marvellous job backstage producing. And we've asked various people, haven't we, Doug, during the course of this next 2 hours. They're not necessarily going to be people that you hear every day on the air.
Some fascinating choices.
Yes, indeed. And, in fact, Judith Dawson has come up with something which is very original indeed, and it features what, to my mind, is the finest noise that's been put on record over the past couple of years.
That's just some of the music of Georgi Zamfa, and a fine example, too, of this very individual performer. It first came to my attention when I went to see the movie Picnic at Hanging Rock. As a theme tune, it strongly evokes this really beautiful picture, which recounts the true late 19th century story of a group of schoolgirls who go on a day outing with their teachers and are never seen again. So the haunting quality of Zamfa's music is well suited to the mystery and romance inherent in this unsolved tale. It's been just one of the many good Australian feature films to appear in London in the past few years. And as the credits roll up at their ending, one realises that they have been made, to a large extent, courtesy of the Australian government. Wilson set up an interim action committee on the future of our film industry. There's still not much evidence that we're anywhere near establishing a British film authority. But Australia, with their film commission, have proven pretty conclusively, I think, that government intervention can establish a lively, interesting and culturally valid film industry in a very short time without lessening the all-important autonomy of the filmmakers. International recognition, too, has been enormously important to that country, which has long seemed, from this distance anyway, to have a conspicuous inferiority complex about their cultural traditions. A brilliant movie by my reckoning, and their official entry at Cannes this year, was The Chant of Jimmy Blacksmith. It's their most expensive production to date and cost the grand total of $2 million. Contrast that with the outrage of $30 million for Jaws 2 and figures approaching that for the rest of the big British and American movies. So what this is all about, apart from having a nice time listening to Georgie Zamfa, and I'll stop soon so you can hear a little more, is to talk about the national and international importance of funding a British film authority before the film industry in this country disappears up yet another remake of a one-time sure thing.
I said noise at the beginning of that, but I meant sound. It really is the most incredible sound, Doug, isn't it?
Magnificent. Yes. Magnificent.
And the picnic at Hanging Rock, of course. Thank you, Judith, very much indeed. Marvellous piece of music. Well, now, who's next?
Well, you've all heard of Long Tall Sally. Now we're coming to Long Tall Vivian, all 6 foot 10.5 inches or something like that of him. Now, Vivian White has had a remarkably varied career since he joined LBC some years ago. He's been a general news reporter. Then he went on to do a spell in the afternoon presenting the programmes with all our ladies, Barbara Kelly and the ladies like her.
Yeah, that was an interesting particular occasion, that, when he had Claire Rayner and Barbara Kelly in the afternoon programmes. Of course, Vivian, as you say, is as tall as the Empire State. And these diminutive ladies would come in, and Vivian loomed over them. Most inhibiting sort of fellow, but there you are.
Well, he did a marvellous job in the afternoons. Then he joined our parliamentary staff, and then he got itchy feet again. And just a few weeks ago, he became our industrial editor. So He's feeling pretty confident, I think. I'd be very interested to know what he's chosen, Bob.
Well, in case you're of the opinion that industrial editors always choose something like a piece of ragtime music or something by the Troggs, well, you're completely wrong, because, in fact, Vivian White has asked specifically for the Yehudi Menuhin version of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto.
You might have thought I was going to choose something more industrial. The massed bands of the Institute of Directors, perhaps, or the TUC Congress Quartet playing the theme from Dad's Army, or perhaps the water workers in Swan Lake. Mere speculation, though, you see, and wrong at that, because what it was Yehudi Menuhin playing the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. Well, just a bit of it. When I was a child, let me tell you a story. It's a true story, and I was a child once. We had this piece of music on record at home. To say it was the prize of the collection rather misses the point, since it made up a third or a half of the entire collection, so far as I remember. And one day, my father and my uncle, who used to be an opera singer, were going to play the record, and one of them said, "Did I know the concerto?" And I said, "Yes." "Could you sing the beginning, then?" they said. "The very beginning," I said, and they said, "Yes." And I tried very hard to imitate on voice the squeaky bit at the very beginning of our record. I never knew that was just the violin tuning up. Yehudi Menuhin never told me. He never said anything about it on the cover. But that sad story apart, I have no complaint at all against Mr. Menuhin. I admire him deeply. I've even met him once, fleetingly, to ask him a snatched question, clutching my faithful tape recorder, and that was a very exciting moment for me. And as to the music, it makes me, yes, I'll admit it, it can easily bring me to tears, but that's no harm. And I do know how it starts. La da da la da da la da 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 da. La 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 la. Thank you.
Oh, truly one of my favourite pieces of classical music. Yehudi Menuhin and the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. Well, so much for Vivian White. What are you going to choose, Dougie?
Well, that's one of the surprise Christmas packages of the day, Bob. That will be revealed a little later.
Well, Pete Christie next, here on this special Christmas edition of the Bob and Doug Show. He's well known, of course, as our Monday minstrel here on LBC, but what possibly is not quite so well known by some people is that he's also a member of the group Instant Sunshine.
Well, Philip Bacon, who's producing our show this morning, went along to a reception that the group held to highlight their latest record, and he had a chat with Pete.
I think we're using all our talents in this as well, because we're doing some rather delightful mime, and particularly Alan is using his mime technique to great advantage on this particular LP, which I think shows itself very well.
All those great skills that made Marcel Marceau such a great successful producer of LPs. Records.
Yes. You can tell it's good mime because the audience reaction is absolutely wild. In fact, the audience reaction is on another LP altogether, which is the Instant Sunshine audience in concert.
We haven't tried the hard sell, you know, that this is a great glamorous group of young men, because we're not young men anymore, we're youngish men now. And on the record, you'll recognise it, because if you look at us from a distance, it looks like four men in smart dinner jackets. If you look closely, you'll see all sorts of deliberate mistakes. One brown shoe amongst the dinner jackets, and one man with a hook instead of a hand.
Are they new dinner jackets?
They're the same old new dinner jackets we've always had, yes. They're still very new, yes. Yes.
And there's a technical departure, isn't there? The engineering of the record is fairly revolutionary, I understand.
Well, it is. You see, on our first record, we recorded it all in the studio. Rather cold and clinical, but perfect. And the second record was done live with an audience, all that sort of vibrant, wonderful feel you get at the Palladium. We weren't at the Palladium, but the same sort of thing. And the third one, we've compromised. We did it in a studio, and we've got that sort of cold, clinical feeling, but we've got lots of mistakes as well. And I think this is a new departure for us.
A song called Beefcake, which is about...
our beautiful bodies.
Our beautiful bodies, building up your body and how you should do that.
I wrote off for a bodybuilding course designed to bring... I want to be a he-man. With suntan, like Tarzan, with man-sized bicep, crippling tricep, yes, and thighs. A big brown beefcake ball with steel blue eyes.
Coming up to the time when, in fact, one eats a large bird on Christmas Day, and we feel it's time for people to think about the suffering that they go through as they sit in their little cages watching those rows of cranberry pickers lurking over the horizon. So it's a song for the turkey, isn't it?
Yes.
This is the Instant Sunshine serious message, which I know is always found on your
records. This is our campaign for the turkey. In fact, we are advising everybody this year to eat a nut cutlet instead. We're hoping that this will come about.
Yes. Pour brandy over it, set it alight, watch it shrivel to a fragment, and get out the joint of beef you've been saving all along.
Gobble, 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 we must stop tormenting the turkey. Gobble, gobble, at Christmas his prospects are grim. Gobble, gobble, defeathered, defluffed, then tossed up and stuffed. There's no merry Christmas for him. December's a bad time for turkeys. Gobble, gobble, and though life's decidedly bleak, gobble, gobble, they never show fear at this time of year, but all keep a stiff upper beak.
Perhaps the most important song of all is the boring song. We've got a song which you can all join in with, which goes on for a very, very long time and has a good chorus that should bore anybody, I think.
It's the sort of thing that gives boredom a bad name.
Let's sing a boring song, a boring song, a boring song. A song we can sing in the bar for the bar with an oom-pa-pa-oom-pa-pa-oom-pa-pa. So many songs today have something important to say. Let's sing a song that is easy to sing along. Let's sing a boring, boring, boring. Let's sing a boring song. When life is boring, there's no point ignoring a way to help things along. Sing this song, fa-la-la, 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 clouds of gray. Sing this chorus loud and long, so let's sing a boring song. Ring, boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom, boom,
Think of a sound. Yamaha gives it to you. Think of another sound. One finger is all you need on a new Yamaha organ. Everyone can make music quickly. And with Yamaha doing all the work, you'll discover musical talent you never knew you had. See them at Western Music, Hammersmith, Croydon, Wimbledon and Sutton, or telephone 01-748-5824.
Mr. Barrett, who are all these people waiting outside the studio? Are they members of your appreciation society?
In a way, yes, they are. It's the cream of my staff, those who have attained the highest standard in singing. They're going to sing a Christmas song to thank our customers for their support in the year. We've been rehearsing for weeks.
What, under your direction?
Yes, that's right. Choir, 3, 2, 1.
Christmas, Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, yeah!
Be good to yourself. Discover the Barkers of Kensington sale. Be good to yourself. Discover the Barkers of Kensington sale. Be good to yourself. Discover the Barkers of Kensington sale. Be good. The Barkers sale starts Wednesday. Wednesday. Wednesday.
Justice Barnett proudly presents The World of Melanie Parker.
A Merry Christmas to all my listeners. I dropped in on the vicar yesterday at his used car showroom in the High Street. Goodness, vicar, still hard at work even on Christmas Eve?
Yes, Melanie, Percy and I have to change the tyres on Colonel Bulge's car.
But they look perfectly all right to me.
To the untrained eye, perhaps, not to the expert. Percy, four Baldies, quick as you can.
Hiya, Vicar.
What on earth are Baldies?
Oh, we got no tread on them, see? Swap them over and we can flog the Colonel's goodens for a lot of...
Yes. Back to work, Percy.
Vicar, I have to speak to you. I'm in the most terrible trouble.
Good heavens, Melanie, you're not...
No, no. Oh, no. Nothing like that.
What is it that Melanie Parker's trouble is nothing like? Why do they call Colonel Bulge Old Baldy? And why does Augustus Barnett carry such an amazingly wide range of wines and spirits? How does he keep his prices so low? Listen tomorrow to episode 62 of The World of Melanie Parker, brought to you by Augustus Barnett.
261.
From Bob Holness
and Douglas Cameron
to this Christmas spectacular. We're with you for another hour and a half, so let's sit back and listen to a little more of Ronnie Aldrich. Unmistakable, isn't he, Douglas?
tremendous, isn't he?
Yeah, Ronnie Aldrich and his two pianos, of course, and a little bit of White Christmas, taking us into part two of this Christmas spectacular here on LBC. And in case you've just tuned in, here's Douglas to tell you what it's all about.
Well, what we're doing in the couple of hours this morning is to invite various contributors who've helped us over the last 12 months in the AM show to choose their particular type of record. And a fascinating study it's turning out to be. We've had some marvellous selections already from Jim Kelts and Vivian White and one of the ladies on our station, Judith Dawson. It really does tell you a little bit about a person, doesn't it, their choice of music, I always feel.
Wonder if anybody's thought what lies behind the facade of Douglas Moffat, our financial editor.
Well, I should think he'll choose something like Money, That's What I Want. Don't you think so? Or do you think a little less obvious?
Perhaps something like You've Got to Have Money in the Bank, Frank.
Yeah.
Let's find out.
I was in a bit of a dilemma when I was asked to do this. My first thought was just to grab one of the cassettes I play in the car. They tend to be the sort of music that was around when I used to listen semi-clandestinely to Radio Luxembourg when I did my homework. One of the DJs was one Bob Holness, tee-hee. Summer relief, though, just passing through. I suppose it's because it coincided with my adolescence, precocious little thing that I was, that I never get tired of early vintage rock and roll ballads. They just do not make them anymore, like Johnny Burnett made them.
Ooh, you come on like a dream, peaches and cream, lips like strawberry wine. You're 16, you're beautiful, and you're mine.
But for my only selection, well, maybe that's a bit bubblegummy, not to mention a bit old. And after all, though I've never warmed to heavy sausage, or whatever those strange groups really are called, my musical taste didn't atrophy completely in the late 50s or early 60s. I can listen to yards of that sort of stuff, but I suppose it's not exactly in the Christmas sentiment. But then it came to me in a blinding flash. What this programme would need, if I know anything about Messrs. Holness and Cameron when they're in festive mood, would be a bit of class. And while Johnny Burnett and the ELO may make your knees or whatever tremble a bit, they don't really stir the soul, do they? For me, Wagner does. Now, I always admit to some shyness about sharing my musical tastes with Bernard Levin and Adolf Hitler, or indeed identifying with the product of a strange, short man of uncertain parentage who saw himself as some sort of musical messiah, a man who behaved as though he knew he was a supreme genius, demanding that the world owe him a living, and who wrote volumes about himself and his music, and indeed established a theatre at Bayreuth, where his music and himself could be worshipped. But it is spectacular music, and to appreciate it, you don't have to get tied up in the intricacies of the strange Teuton symbolism he used to use to weave his themes. I don't think it really adds much to know that this portrays the parting of Siegfried from his beloved Brunhilde, looking with foreboding to the future when Siegfried will be slain, and even less, as the sleeve notes to this particular version tell me, evoking Brunhilde, answering the calls of his hunting horn, viz. Fond smiles. Whatever turns you on, I suppose. Just music will do for me.
Thank you.
All very nice. Well, what an amazing varied taste Douglas Moffat's got. You see, we'd never know, would
no,
we?
No,
he sits poised over his calculator in the office there. Well, incidentally, it's interesting to hear him mention Radio Luxembourg there, because they were the good old days. Well, no, they were the old days. I don't know they're that good, you know.
I didn't know that you were a DJ on Radio Luxembourg, Bob.
Well, for a short while, yes, we did. I think the programme was called Top Spin, and it was a daily show, which I shared with Maggie Streder. If you remember, she's one of the ladybirds, and she's got her own singers and dancers now, but... They were interesting days. Not terribly remunerative, but interesting. It was after Take a Letter and Crisscross Quiz and before Top of the Form. Yes.
What a long and varied career you've had, sir.
We are now going to turn to a member of a group which we haven't really mentioned so far, have we?
No, that's Independent Radio News, IRN. And I think I can best describe them as saying... they provide a news service to all the commercial radio stations up and down the country, much as ITN do for all the commercial television stations. And they're in the same building as we are, and they provide the news on the hour every hour, and they will be doing so in a few minutes' time at 9 o'clock. And when you hear somebody say Independent Radio News at 9, that generally falls to me during the year, but somebody else is going to take that chore off my hands this morning. But if you can just picture the scene when Bob is doing his menu of what's going to happen in the next hour or so on AM, when he says we'll be talking to the Prime Minister and then we'll be hearing something from Mrs. Thatcher, when that's going on with the music behind him, what happens is that one of the duty editors from IRN is rushing in with the news at 7
true,
or 8 or
true.
9 and saying, it looks like 3 minutes here, Doug. It's 3 minutes we have to put into 3 minutes 15 or something like that. And there's all sorts of stuff going on that you, the listener, know nothing about. Thank goodness for that, really.
Yeah. And the reason for all this preamble is that we are, in fact, introducing a member of the IRN team now. His name is Noel Webster. Noel, it's over to you.
I suppose Christmas is the one time more than any other when we all think about home. My home for the first two-thirds of my life was Australia, but I've only been back there once in 12 years. For the past 5 years, I've been here in London, and now when I think of home, I think of England. And that's why I'd like to offer a musical favourite of mine as a personal thank you to you for having me here. It's a lovely old ballad, and it's played by an English group which I think are as fine a set of jazz musicians as you'll hear anywhere in the world. And if you'd like to hear them, you'll find them playing live most weekends at the Bull's Head Pub in Barnes. So it's Merry Christmas from me via the Tony Lee Trio and My One and Only Love.
A smooth sound of the Tony Lee Trio to open your packages with on this Christmas morning. And that was Noel Webster's choice on this spectacular programme. We call it a spectacular. I don't know if it's that spectacular.
Well, Bob, I'd like Singing in the Rain.
Oh, Singing in the Rain. Oh,
yeah, right, yeah. Last year, just before you go on, last year we had that marvellous number sung by Gene Kelly.
I saw it again this year, about 3 weeks ago, on the box. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, well, I think I'll make a change this time. Now, a lot of people have recorded this. Jimmy Durante in 1932.
Really?
Judy Garland in 1940, and, of course, dear old Gene Kelly in 1952. Hmm. I'm going back to 1929 for this one. The Hollywood Review of 1929 was the movie, and here comes Singing in the Rain, sung by Cliff, Ukulele Ike Edwards. Put up your brollies.
Stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with your rain, I've got a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain. Just sing, sing in the rain.
There you are, that's my boy, Ukulele Ike.
It's very good. What was it from?
The Hollywood Review of 1929.
An amazing piece of music. I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that this is a Christmas program, Douglas. Now, I've got a very short one to pop in here, if you don't mind. May I?
Please do.
Well, thank you very much. There's a gentleman called Gene Perling, who used to be one of a vocal group called the Hi-Lows, a great group at one time. He reformed with three other people called Don Shelton, Len Dresler, and Bonnie Herman. They call themselves the Singers Unlimited. We don't hear much of them in this country, but they've done a marvellous Christmas album, and here's just one of the tracks.
Caroling, caroling, now we go. Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling through the snow. Christmas bells are ringing. Joyous voices, sweet and clear. Sing a sad of heart to cheer. Ding dong, ding dong. Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling through the town, Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling up and down, Christmas bells are ringing. Mark ye well the song we sing, gladsome tidings now we bring. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing. Caroling, caroling near and far, Christmas bells are ringing. Following, following yonder star, Christmas bells are ringing. Sing we all this happy morn, lo, the King of Heaven is born. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing. Ding dong, ding dong, Christmas bells are ringing.
A beautiful spot of harmony from Singers Unlimited and Caroling, Caroling. Good morning, if you've just joined us on this Christmas morning. Bob and Doug with your Christmas spectacular, as we keep calling it. What's next on the list? It's one of, and I know she won't mind me saying this, one of our newer presenters, isn't it, Doug?
Yes, choice by Sue Jameson. And Sue does the Going Home show, what we call the Going Home show in the trade, and that is on between 5 and 8 o'clock, Monday to Friday, and She's made quite a big impact on listeners. I wonder if she's going to make a big impact on listeners this morning with her music.
Well, let's find
when
out.
When I was young, I never needed any encouragement to tread the boards. Other fairies, elves and dragons were pushed trembling onto the school hall stage to sing in faltering and tearful tones, "I'm a little teapot, short and stout." Others tore their white crepe paper dresses, but not me. I was the one who needed to be dragged off at the end after the audience had already left. This love of the stage has remained burned deep inside me like an indelible stain, which partly explains, I suppose, why I'm doing the job I am at LBC. I ran the gamut of all school plays, grasping every opportunity that came my way, and the trend continued at university, with the result that I frequently tore late into lectures, still disentangling myself from false whiskers and ears, or removing green face makeup.
Let's face it, everything is going to be in stark contrast to that one.
Big bands.
Happy Christmas, Ron.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Stan Kenton's over. You can come back in now.
Well, is he over? Because didn't you say he was going to be on a bit more? What's he going to play now? No,
it's something which I bet you haven't heard. And in fact, it's a very interesting choice. And I'll tell you who it's by. It's by Bob Beckman, who's our stock market expert. That'll be coming up a little later on. But, I mean, we're building up to it so much that people can expect the earth. They're going to get it, too. Now, who have we got next, Doug?
Well, sir. What a crawler I am.
Well, I wouldn't have said that on the air, but since you bring the subject up, did you know him, Father?
No.
Yes, he is. You're absolutely besotted by him.
Really? Even...
That's another story. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Now, Doug, the moment you've been waiting for.
Really?
Yes, Bob Beckman.
Oh, he's not so bad.
It's the music that follows. Yeah.
261 LBC.
What do you drink with the cranberry sauce? Well, what a question. What does it mean? Panic stations, to tell you the truth. Will the turkey turn out all right? Will Auntie Ethel talk to Uncle Fred for the first time in 30 years? Mum's not going to like that bottle of perfume we bought for her. Should have bought a penny like last year. Have I done enough potatoes? What do you drink with the cranberry sauce? Where is the blessed cranberry sauce? Better still, where's the sherry? That, in a nutshell, is what this programme is about. Forgetting the horrors of mass catering on Christmas Day, putting your feet up for a while, and listening to an awful lot of my favourite man at this time of year, or any time, Bing Crosby.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why.
Why?
Santa Claus is coming to town.
My nose is red and overblown. My eyes are pink and puffy. My ears are blocked. My throat is sore. My head is very stuffy. These symptoms crop up every year. They're now an annual fixture. While you are downing wine and beer, I'll toast you with cough mixture. Bing. Help.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun to ride and sing in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Christmas time wouldn't be complete without a message from one of the country's respected leaders.
Who's King Freddie Barrett here in the Christmas season? Just to wish you all good cheer, even though it's freezing. Cut pricing for everyone at the keenest prices. Come along, it's so much fun. Have some fine surprises.
Merry Christmas!
Yeah!
Mr. Barrett, who are all these people waiting outside the studio? Are they members of your appreciation society?
In a way, yes, they are. It's the cream of my staff, those who have attained the highest standard in singing. They're going to sing a Christmas song to thank our customers for their support in the year. We've been rehearsing for weeks.
What, under your direction?
Yes, that's right. Choir, 3, 2, 1.
Christmas, Christmas, Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas! Yeah!
You've had a good night out.
Okay, well, back to Earth with a bump now, because where there's food and drink aplenty, like Christmas Day, there's usually a hangover not far behind. Over the years, Paul has become something of an expert on this clinical condition, through observation, you understand, rather than experience, of course. Anyway, here are his views on why Christmas gets longer each year, and each alcoholic tot gives the hangover a hang-up.
The human body, that is the personal variety, not, as it were, the body human, or la condition humaine, in other words, is a pretty wonderful thing. For while in the long term it may be that the human body can let some people down rather badly, indeed sometimes terminally, it is in the short run apparently prepared to put up with, and make good after, a fair degree of chemical abuse. This is just as well, for otherwise we should have to invent some kind of substitute for life. As the Christmas holidays continue to expand to the point we've now reached where it seems difficult to see the other side very clearly, rather like through this miasma that's been hanging over London for 2 days now, seeping through the letterbox into our undecked halls, so the possible degree of self-abuse expands too. Last year we could afford the luxury of waking up with a pounding head, a palpitating heart, a twitching hand, and a barbed wire entanglement in the gut 7 mornings in a row. This year it's 10. Next year, well, they're thinking of running Christmas right through to Wimbledon, the sort of district line of a holiday, which will not only open up new possibilities for the microprocessor, but will also polish off the redundant working classes, since no human body can tolerate that degree of self-abuse. By 1985, it seems extremely likely that Christmas will have run into the Christmas of 1986. This is the awful point at which we wake up, actually on Christmas morning itself, and groan, no more, never again, and so on. All the usual New Day's resolutions of the frightened alcoholic, and actually mean it. At that point, Christmas will cease to have any meaning and may safely be cancelled. For by then, it'll be the one day of the year we aren't poisoning our systems with food and drink. Whoever described sleep as the little death was obviously thinking of the kind of sleep I've been getting this Christmas week. Well, actually, Christmas week is supposed to be the week after Christmas, but we'll let that pass. Waking every morning at about 3, fumbling down the stairs for a glass of water and the Enos, back to bed with every twinge of heartburn, incipient angina, or at best the big one, the clot that kills, and the holiday hasn't even hit us yet. I suppose part of the pleasure of drinking too much must be masochistic. This stuff you're pouring down you to the point of grinning idiocy and a minicab home is actually a lethal poison. Every tot you take fries a couple of million of your brain cells. After a while, these are no longer replaced, which is why, at the age of 30, I can just about remember things that happened 5 years ago. Hence the real truth behind that old gag about the guy who's forgot what he's drinking to forget. Every jolly holiday morning is like a fantasy of being pulled round by some TV doctor in the recovery room. The hangover reaffirms man's faith in God, since by lunchtime that august deity has usually managed to patch you up enough for that first delicious ice-cold beer, and by nightfall, the wolves are prowling once again. But self-abuse at Christmas doesn't only come from the mouth of a bottle. It must have been at Christmas time that the high priest of thinking thin in the kitchen, Michel Gérard, wrote these classic words. I have been a dreamer for 42 years. Sometimes I dream at night, more often during the day. But one particular morning I woke up in a sweat, having slept heavily and sluggishly. All that night, as I did so often, I had been trying to escape into my dream, but this time it was hopeless. My poor body, heavy with the residue of so many rich and delectable sources, was so well covered that it weighed me to the ground, where dreams cannot take flight. My great pleasure in the joys of the table was about to be given a beating, starting with a sharp blow in the taste buds. And so it is to Michel Gérard's instructive book, Cuisine Mansur, that I turn now for inspiration, particularly to the passage on the technique of roasting your turkey, or whatever, and some healthy tips. For a start, you shouldn't let the roast sit in a pool of its own fat and juices, so stand it on a rack above the roasting tin. If you can't be bothered to baste the bird every 10 minutes, cook it breast side down, though this may spoil the shape. Gérard says you must coat the roast with a mixture of oil and butter, starting off with the oven hot enough to sear the meat quickly, and then turning it down. Don't salt it until it's cooked. When it is cooked, you should leave it to rest for a while before serving. This makes the flesh more tender and evenly cooked. Gérard says, if roasting in the oven or spit is done correctly, it can be used in cuisine mansur, because the fat and oil are used in very small quantities and are there, once the meat is browned, only to prevent it from burning. As in cuisine mince grilling, poultry should be pricked all over with a needle to release the fat lying between the skin and the flesh. To make the gravy, all that is necessary is to skim off all the fat that is collected in the roasting tin. And once you've removed every trace of fat from the roasting tin, put the joint to rest in a covered dish for 15 to 20 minutes before serving. The juices which seep out of the roast can be used as the basis of an excellent cuisine mince gravy. So a fat-free Christmas is possible, and indeed desirable. But as to what one drinks with the cranberry sauce, if one must have cranberry sauce, may I suggest champagne? It leaves me feeling terrible in the morning, but it's a great way to go.
You can suggest champagne, Paul. I don't know how much you're going to get. Anyway, that is a warning as to the ills of Christmas too. Well, Arthur Schwartz now, and a shine on your shoes.